Are you ready for this?
Yes, it's your Pod Blast. We talk England v India, but enough of that. War and cause of the Australian cricket board, a load of Muppets. There's more roid steroid news as we give you a cricket news before it happens, and we keep it in the family like they do in Cornwall, with family cricket connections.
We've only got 30 minutes for this podcast, Ross. Austerity podcast, if you will. Wow. Let's keep it nice and simple. England, India, Warn, steroids, Muppets, family.
Are we going to get all that in, do you think?
All of it. Let's begin with England, India, straight away.
Let's do it.
3-2 to England at the end of the ODI series. Ross, we're going to discuss England in detail, but let's begin with India. Man of the series, no real controversy here, Suresh Raina.
He rained all over our parade, all right. He was fantastic. He scored a 50, didn't he, in every innings he played?
He scored four 50s. He had a strike rate of 91. He had an average of 92. And he scored 277 runs in the series. Can we just add one more thing to that? He's not a bad bowler.
Yeah, he's all right. He does bowl a little bit of part-time too. I don't think he bowled much in this series, but he's got that in his locker. He's probably a bit of a, you know, he's a more experienced Joe Root type bowler, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. He's better than Joe Root at the moment, isn't he?
He is, but I think Root could, anyway, we'll talk more about him
Joe Root in time. I like the way that already, Ross, sensing that when discussing India, you may be floundering in the current. Yeah. You move towards the shallow, easy, warm waters of the England side.
What I wanted to say, in fact, was... particularly about Dhoni and Rayner is that I was saying at one point, you know, Butler that came in, there was a Keith Vetter, looks like he's out pretty much for good, I would say.
Butler's 14. Has anyone ever scored a better 14 than in that penultimate ODI?
14.
It's a really good 14.
It's a lovely 14. Other people have noted that, but it was a lovely 14. It had a lovely effortless six in there. Anyway, enough about that. India. The thing is, I've always thought when he was dropped, how consistent can you be as a number six? There's only so many people that can be that Michael Bevan and finish games off and have a great strike rate and an average consistently. Who does that? Well, at 5 or 6, Rayner and Dhoni pretty much do it, don't they? I mean, they're fantastic cricketers. Rayner's so consistent at international level, and Dhoni just seemed to bash England round and most teams, but pretty much England is the one he enjoys most, I think. Effortlessly, really, and consistently, and it's that consistency that I think makes them a really good one-day side. Still, they're
an excellent one-day side, and they're going to be let's bear in mind they're the world champions. Yep. They're going to the Champions Trophy, and as I'll say in a few moments, there's every reason to believe that they can win it. Sticking with Rayner for a moment, quick tweet this week to an Indian follower of ours, and I said, "Is it time for him to be in the Test team?" Let's bear in mind that Yuvraj Singh is in the Test team. Yuvraj averaged 25 against England, the only specialist batsman for India who averaged less against England in the recent series was Sachin Tendulkar. So, what's the problem with Rayner? The last Test he played was the 2011 series in England.
Yep.
But I would say, looking back, people will talk about Australia, but the pinnacle of the England team, to my mind, was that destruction of India. It was ruthless in 2011, and he had a problem with the short ball. Other players have had problems with the short ball. Other players have come back. He is a really fantastic player, and he should be in the Indian Test side.
I have no issue with that. I think he's a really good player, and I think he maybe hasn't been looked at as much as some of the other players in India. And they should probably give him one last go before they dispense and sort of move on to that new breed of the fantastic kind of batsmen they've got coming through India. But I would say he strikes me as a little bit of an Owen Morgan. I don't know whether he will ever quite make it at that level. And there's nothing wrong, like Bevan, as we mentioned before, in having a batsman who is an absolute specialist at limited overs cricket.
Neil Fairbrother. So you've likened Rayner to Neil Fairbrother. I'm not sure Fairbrother was ever man of the series over 5 games, an average of 92, but maybe I'll be corrected by that. You know what really jumps out from the stats for the Indian batting lineup?
Tell me.
Strike rate. The comparison of strike rate with the England batting averages is extraordinary, because Rayner at 90, Jadeja at 92... And then Rohit Sharma's even at 85, Kohli's at 82, Dhoni's straight on a run a ball. The only guy who's dropping a little bit is Gambhir. And this is something that, it got my goat. It was a pet peeve, if you will.
Pet peeves.
Going too slow. The England tactics at the moment need to be looked at. And as I understand the England tactics, they're as follows. Keep wickets in hand, see off the two new balls at the beginning, Yeah. We got big hitters at the end. Worked perfectly in the penultimate game where they scored 100 off the last 10 overs, save for one factor. Do you know what that is, Ross?
What is it?
They lost.
Yeah, that's true.
They lost these guys. They're batting too slowly at the top of the order. Let's be clear. The minimum you should be scoring at the top of the order, even if you're looking to consolidate with wickets, is four. You have to be scoring at least four and over.
Yeah.
You can't tick along at three because it puts too much pressure on the players below.
Having said that, though, England's big problem this series surely has not been getting a score on the board at all. And I think the one go slow was the fourth test where they clearly didn't put on enough runs. And as soon as they tested their mettle and brought the score up a little bit, players like Rohit Sharma, who I think is an excellent player, by the way, stepped on the gas a little bit and he found it was quite easy to accelerate in ways that England players had found so difficult. Having said that, I mean, I'll be really pleased to see Trott back. I think it's been mentioned on other podcasts that he has the...
You've been multi-blasting again.
I've been multi-blasting, sure. He has the highest average for an English one-day ODI cricketer ever, one-day eye. I'm using my one-day eye to look at those stats.
Can I go back to my pet peeve for one moment?
Go on.
Because you're being very reasonable, Ross.
Yeah.
And I think maybe it's a little bit because we're recording at 12 noon, so you haven't had your normal, snifters, your cocktails.
That's true. You're I'm not quite so drunk by this time.
That you can barely console yourself.
Mm.
Now, the reason...
Control.
Who knows?
Yeah, I try, but I can't.
Can't console yourself.
No, I'm a weeping mess. Go on.
England, if they're going to go slow at the beginning, if they can try and consolidate wickets, there's no plan B. If it goes wrong, if you've gone 30 overs and you've scored about 100 for maybe, say, one or two, and you lose two wickets quickly, you're just 100 for four with 20 overs to go. Whereas if you're going at four, five and over, right, at least you've got the runs on the board. It's an all or nothing approach, isn't it?
I agree in theory. The only thing I would say is there's the tactic that England... one of the things that they've really done with their one-day team is to put five really good bowlers in, which they didn't do this time, and bat steadily, which they didn't do this time. And we won all those other matches. Our amazing run has come probably through keeping strike rate up, and I'm an absolute advocate of that. But I would say the bigger problem is not getting any runs on the board at all, giving the bowlers who are excellent and are going to be stronger when players like Jimmy Anderson come in, anything to bowl at. So that's what I'd say.
Well, this was a watershed series for the Indian side because they searched beyond Zahir Khan for a young seam attack. And
you've always said he was quite fat anyway, haven't you?
I mean, it's no great profound comment to say that Zahir Khan was sort of morbidly out of shape. And that's another reason why guys like Rayner and Kohli are so exciting. Because they're sending out a message that you can't be a fat pucker.
Yeah, yeah.
And be in the Indian side.
Have you seen the advert, by the way, with Dhoni and Kohli? And they're both on motorbikes. They're looking a bit cocky. Oh, it's quite funny. It's good. No, it's a guy looking for a motorbike. And he's like, oh, maybe I'll get this motorbike. And he turns around and Dhoni's behind him in his leathers. And it's really exciting. And then he goes, man, this couldn't get much more exciting. And then tapping him on the shoulder is Kohli. And he's like, yeah, check me out. I'm also in leather.
I'm aroused.
It's pretty cool. Kohli's funny because I don't see him as... he's got like a cocky smile about him. But he hasn't got the sort of face or body of a man that should be that cocky. Do you know what I mean?
There's a discrepancy.
Yeah, but his talent is huge. He's just sort of, he's a little more unassuming looking. That's what I like about him. But he's got quite a lot of fire about him, I think.
Yeah, unlike Jadeja, he's just very handsome.
Do you like Jadeja? Do you find him very handsome?
Oh, he's a very handsome man.
He's got a perm. He is good though, isn't he? Let's go on to that. He looked very average in the Test series, but... he's more than useful. He's just the kind of cricketer that we'd like to be.
Really. Well, he bowled 40 overs for 142 runs with an average of 15.77. He was their leading wicket taker with 9 wickets. He was their most economical bowler with an economy rate of 3.49. There's absolutely no doubt about the fact that Jadeja is integral to their one-day side now. But let's talk about the other bowlers quickly.
Hang on, he also had a batting average of 64 and a strike rate of 92.75.
Incredible.
He's really good, isn't he?
He is excellent. And England is exactly the sort of cricketer that England could do with, because they need someone to be their fifth bowler and also hit some runs. And we'll come back to that in a moment.
More on that.
The young seam attack. First of all, Ashok Dhinder plays against Pakistan, plays the first ODI against England is jettison, because his 2 for 53 off 8 overs is deemed not good enough.
It's a bit Dernbach-like, isn't it?
He's 28 years old as well. He doesn't look threatening to my mind.
Does he wear a headband still?
He does. Yeah. He does. They bring in Kumar, but not our favourite. Not Praveen Kumar, but Bhuvneshwar Kumar. He takes no wickets in the final two ODIs and only four in total in the five of them. He's a medium pacer. Yeah. So my question for you, and there's bias.
Yeah.
How on earth is he a better option than Praveen Kumar, who is still only 26?
We love Praveen, don't we? We talk about Praveen a lot.
English conditions, Champions Trophy.
Yeah, he's good.
He was the beating heart of that Indian side in 2011. He was fantastic. And he's played 68 ODIs, and he can bat.
Yeah. Can he?
Yes, he can bat.
That bit.
He might have been out because he's coming back from a tennis elbow injury.
Yeah.
And as we know with Bresnan, who may be going to have surgery on it, can affect you as a bowler. But I want to see Praveen back. And Praveen's got to be bowling, to my mind, with Ishant Sharma, who in the final ODI on that up and down pitch was virtually unplayable.
Yeah.
Bowling cook. Do you see that?
Yeah. That was very... He's a good bowler, Ishant Sharma. He is so dreamy. Ishant Sharma's the leader of the attack.
Oh. All right, let me give you my team for the Champions Trophy, okay. Or as they're now calling it, the Debel Trophy.
He cares about
Gambhir at one, Rohit Sharma at two, Kohli at three, Rayner at four, Yuvraj at five. I've done a reversal there. Dhoni at six, Jadeja at seven, Ashwin at eight, Praveen Kumar at nine, Ishant Sharma at 10, and Shami Ahmed at 11. What do you think of that team, Ross?
You've done two things that they'll never do. Rayner will bat at five because they like him lurking as if sort of beneath the pavement, like a sort of small animal. Ready to leap out and pounce on the England bowlers when they least expect it.
I'm intrigued what sort of animals you know that lurk beneath pavements.
It's kind of a weird pavement-y kind of fox. Like a pavement, like a city fox.
Ah, the pavement fox.
Yes, the pavement fox. I like Rayner.
India are a formidable side. Rayner needs to bat higher, in my opinion. But they are lacking in probably one opener and one seamer.
Yeah, Praveen won't be it. I don't think he'll be it, although I completely agree.
He was great in England in 2011.
You've voted with your wishful thinking there rather than your actual mind.
68 ODIs, that man. And he can bat.
Has he 68?
And he's got very funny facial expressions.
I do like him. Anyway, moving on.
Okay, so my England team, Cook, Bell, Trott at three, Peterson at four. Peterson would be happy to get away from the number three position where he averages less than 30. Morgan at five, Butler at six, Bresnan at seven, Swan at eight, Treadwell at nine, Anderson at 10, Finn at 11. What I've done there is, first of all, Bresnan is balancing the side. England go back to their five bowler. I've kept Butler because I liked his 14. It was a good 14. We've mentioned it before. No place for Wokes, Broad, Root, Bairstow, Patel at the moment.
I think there's two problems there. First of all, Bresnan's a touch high. But you know what I'd say? I don't think position seven matters that much.
No.
I think it was quite telling that I think the Aussies tried to really target, I can't remember where it was, maybe Clark said something like that. Yeah, wait till we get down number seven, then we'll see. And they never got anywhere near on number seven. And I think if you do pick a really good top six, your seven won't swing it. And having Bresnan, Swan and Treadwell might be enough. Having said that, I don't think Bresnan is a number seven. In any form of cricket. Wokes might be, though, and I think he might just get a chance to prove it.
He might be. Debel always calls him a red ball bowler.
I like that. You know, you've got to give him a chance to learn, though, haven't you? And I think England should try and learn a bit more about him now. Certainly looks like he's edged ahead of Mika, and they'd like to see what he can do just because he's got that ability with the bat.
Treadwell's in there, though. I mean, there's space for Treadwell and Warne. Warne, what am I doing?
Space for Warne. Yeah, you've been warned. I think he's done really well. He's found himself back inside on merit. He's overtaken Patel. In terms of a bowler, you really see that the sort of big chasm between the two of them, actually.
It's the experience he seems to bring.
Yeah, yeah.
And he has that with Swan, that sort of hardened professional edge, which I think you need in tournaments.
And I think they can play together. What do you think? I mean, I really do. You've obviously said that, but I really do. I mean, you bowl two right-arm seamers together, no trouble. So why not two right-arm off-seamers?
Well, this goes back to all those aged arguments. Do you remember when there was that thing about Warne and McGill playing together?
Yeah.
And, were they as effective? And McGill was incredibly effective and Warne was less so. I won't lie, I'm stealing that from the most magnificent gift I got on Sunday from my Aunt Diane, On Warne by Gideon Haig, in hardback. I've been reading it. I'm almost finished already. This is a fantastic book.
I like a book by someone called Gideon.
Yes, yes, and Gideon's done a really great job. Sections there about his relationship with McGrath, Steve Waugh, John Buchanan, and Stuart McGill. Really interesting chalk and cheese relationship. We'll be coming back to that book in a moment. Just to tie up the England-India series, Ross, did England progress or regress?
I think in a sense, we possibly touched on it earlier, but I do think that... that their plan is coming off. The batting wasn't great. We had a bit of a slump. We did miss trot. I think it showed that. But overall, I think two wins. That last win oddly put quite a nice sheen on it in the Himalayas.
It's an irrelevance to my mind. You know, when England won at the Oval to make the Ashes 4-1 in 1993, which is my bedrock series, I think it was Steve Waugh at the time said, well, we don't play very well in dead rubbers. Well, you know, they should freeze it at 3-1. If you want a picture of where England are, you have to freeze it at 3-1.
What you've done there is you've believed the rantings of a liar. Because everyone plays in big games. Whether you don't play well in dead rubbers or not is just says more for your professionalism than anything else. The man's an idiot. So that's what I'd say. Aussies saying they don't play well in dead rubbers, that's a pet peeve for me. You just lost. Deal with it. You've won four games. What more of an advantage do you need?
You've just lost to a team with Devon Malcolm in it.
We really put the zap on the Devon Malcolm moment there, didn't we? But it's as if we really hate Devon. But we do love Devon.
Well, I enjoy his adverts at the moment. You know, without you, cricket in state schools is history.
Is that what it is? Yeah.
Recalling his comment, "You guys are history."
You guys are history
against South Africa.
Yeah,
That's a great cause, by the way. Chance to shine.
Hey, support it.
I find it genuinely distressing that when I pack my kid off to school when she's eventually old enough, she could conceivably be going to these inner city London schools. And have like almost like no sports for us.
I thought you were going to say have Devon Malcolm bearing over her.
Yeah, teaching her cricket.
That would be brilliant.
If she gets Devon Malcolm's bowling action, she's going to have back trouble.
Yeah, but boy, a little bit of pace.
Yeah, oh yeah, can't argue with raw pace.
Yeah, raw pace. Listen, I wanted to talk about more raw pace. Steve Finn, this is by the by. What I'm going to say,
okay.
Because the fact is the man shouldn't do it. I've had this ding-dong on Twitter, and a lot of Indians have been saying that,
I agree,
he basically shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
But what does get my goat about the whole situation, it's a bit of a pet peeve, is that cricket, when they try and introduce rules that make up for things that don't need to be, don't need to be made. I mean, there is a self-reflexive punishment. I might have mentioned this before. Have I mentioned it before?
I don't think so. Carry on.
That if you knock the stump over, you know, when that happened when I was younger, people would do that when they're bowling. And they say, well, that just means you're bowling straight. And it does. There is no punishment. Doesn't mean it's no ball. It's nowhere in the rules of cricket. But you have to invoke and bring out 23.4 because you think in retrospect it doesn't seem right somehow that you can knock over the stump.
In the pastoral idyll that was Worcestershire growing up and your young cricketing life, what would happen in terms of run outs and etc. If somebody hit the stumps on their follow through?
Well, it really does. It is self-reflexive punishment. Self-reflexive?
I don't know.
Using it quite confidently. And I'll continue to do so. It's a self-reflexive punishment, Al. It just makes it harder to run the guy out. If the bails are off, because you've knocked them off, you then have to rip the stump out the ground.
I rip the stump out the ground. What a fantastic little cul-de-sac.
Yeah, have you heard of this before?
I have heard of ripping the stump out the ground. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
So that's the little punishment. You don't need to create another one because at some point people have got confused whether that's actually right and the law should be changed. Cricket's fine. Let's get away from all these little 23.4 little rules, which, people have cited and could refer to absolutely anything. All it says is if the batsman might be distracted, he can say at any time, I was a bit distracted. We could have batsmen complaining they had a fly in their face or that the guy had funny laces and they put me off.
It'd be like that Murray moment when the white feather fell from the sky before he was serving against Djokovic before his entire game collapsed.
We could have players throwing feathers at each other.
Yes.
I don't know whether that's against the rules.
It reminded me of the white feather that would be handed to men of conscription age during the First World War by people in the street in a village as if to say, white feather, time for you to get to the front.
Maybe
Sammy.
That's what they were saying.
Maybe that was the white feather falling from the sky.
Come on, Andy, enough of this nonsense.
Next time Bapara is batting and he's having a mental breakdown, I might go out and present him with
a white feather.
Do you think there's blood on the hands of those little village idiots that are handing out white feathers? Do you think that's...
Christ.
It just occurred to me the other day,
strong comment.
Handing a man a white feather and him, you know, say one of them went to the front and died as a result of that white feather.
Yeah.
People died. Maybe Murray's reaction actually on the grand scale of things wasn't too extreme. That.
No, well, what sort of face do you think they do? I know this isn't very conducive to radio. When they hand them that white feather, is it sort of a commiseratory thing or what would it be?
No, no, it's a face of, it's really disappointment, isn't it?
Is it? Oh, unlucky, mate.
Yeah.
Here's the white feather.
Yeah. Sort of Flintoff's face to Brett Lee when they're down, you know, after that.
That is a very good face.
Bad luck.
And it says white a lot, feather. Doesn't it, that face?
Yeah.
Flintoff face. All I'll say is, yeah, if they made it a dead ball, that would make some more sense. Saying dead ball, sorry, saying if they made it a no ball, did I say that? That would have made some sense because, you know, mean them changing the rules for absolutely no reason, but it makes some sense. The dead ball rule is just an umpire being slightly intimidated by a large fat South African captain and not knowing what to do. Well, no offence, Graham Smith, we're gonna watch you a lot in Surrey. Here's some family cricket stories.
New feature on the Podblast, family cricket stories, and we've had a wonderful email in from a listener, Tom Brimfield. Ross, why don't you read in that dulcet baritone of yours?
I'd love to. Okay, it says, hi guys, good start. Lots of stories about my dad are usually a bit dirty. He is, I think, in some circles known as Sex Dad.
Nice.
Interesting. Okay. The story, thankfully, does not involve him seducing, romancing, copulating, boasting about copulating with my mother. I've read this. This is extraordinary. I've never known sort of boast about. Anyway. It relates to the one and only time when I saw him play cricket outside in the back garden for his friend's old boys team.
His first match. Okay.
I saw him play cricket outside the back garden. I see. I thought he had a massive back garden.
Yeah, he was a regular in his back garden.
In his own
his
back
performances
garden.
Outside his back garden were sparse.
Okay. He's a big guy, Tom Brimfield. How
his
big a
dad's
garden?
A big guy.
Yeah, they
it's
probably
a
need a huge garden. Yeah, long-limbed. He described himself confidently to the captain as a spin bowler, and the skipper, with no reason to doubt him, duly brought him on first change. The batting side were doing well, I seem to remember, and had some half-decent players at the crease. Hopefully just two at a time. At the crease, or one at a time.
Just read it.
Rather. The first ball he bowled was fielded without being struck by the batsman at square leg. The second point, I imagine Ross can identify with this particular aspect of the story. No idea what he's talking about there. He was, in short, awful. He bowled so many wides in the first over that the umpires took pity on him, not calling some that Dalsim from Street Fighter 2 would struggle to reach.
80s reference.
Another lanky man. I was mortified. I was at the side of the village green, hearing my dad, the man I looked up to more than anyone else, being ridiculed.
Literally looked up to.
Well, there you go. Not now. Amazingly, the skipper brought him on for another over. A wicket had fallen in the last over, and the umpire introduced my dad as right arm. Sorry, I ruined that joke.
Right arm.
And the umpire introduced him as right arm all over the wicket. Cue big laugh on the boundary. The first ball followed the pattern of the first over. Then, amazingly, the old man clean bowled their opening batsman. The first ball he bowled on the strip, let alone the wicket, it was a great ball too. Medium pace, moved a bit and clattered middle and off. Wow. He came on as a spin bowler. But okay. He continued to bowl some utter dross, but every now and then he'd bowl a straight one and pick up another wicket. Very much like me, actually. He ended up one short of 5 for... and took the most wickets in his side. He was hailed as a tactical genius, lulling the poor unsuspecting batsman into a false sense of security before unleashing a killer straight one, even managing to make a new batsman think that the ball that had gotten their predecessor was a fluke. After watching my dad that game, I knew I wanted to be a bowler. A batsman could never be that inept, never F up that many times, and never F up that many times and be lauded as a tactical genius. I discovered that bowling could be mastered by the technically woeful, the chances, the confidence tricksters, the blaggers. And I will always be grateful to the old man for teaching me that lesson. Love the show, he says.
I mean, really, we only put the letter in for the love the show line.
Love the show, yeah.
P.S. Tony Gonzalez should have his own show. He should. Tony Gonzalez has returned to America. Thank you, Mr. Brimfield, for that wonderful email in. And it's a great story, and he is quite the bowler. One aspect is really family cricket connections is to do with connections to, you know, what we're talking about really. And I'm not saying he misunderstood, but he definitely didn't understand what we were saying. I'm talking about a great grandfather who plays Surrey seconds, who managed to sort of get Prince Ranji out, or W.G. Grace wants to get shit at their great grandmother's Portaloo.
This is very. You want more glamour?
I need more glamour than this.
More glamour and more poo.
But this is a very touching story.
It is.
And I'm very glad that he emailed it in.
I found myself touching you during it.
So, thecricketpodblast@gmail.com for all your cricketing stories. We love to receive them. And if you want to tweet us, it's @cricketpodblast.
Dun, 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 dun. We've had a tweet in. What was it?
Well, we always like to get our listeners' tweets somewhere in on the show. And we had a tweet this week from Andrew Menskill. I think he's based in Australia. He's mad. Yeah. And I think he listened to the show and in particular had listened to our very serious rundown of the threat of steroids in cricket. And obviously we alluded at one point to Nandrolone news by two Pakistani bowlers, but also Shane Warne's use of a diuretic. And we had concluded, and perhaps charitably amongst the two of us, that that was unfortunate, but to do with his vanity and his slimming. And this just came in, @cricketpodblast. When Warney was caught using diuretics back in 03, he did make a rather miraculous and quick recovery from a shoulder injury. So we thought we'd throw that in. We're not making any comment on that. Safe to say that Gideon Haig, in his excellent new book, which I've been reading at the moment, On Warne, talks about that exact episode.
Okay.
And he certainly sides with Warne on this, pointing out the following fact, which I think is really important, that they tested his urine for trace residues of steroids. Mm. They did not find any residue of steroids, and that's why his ban was as short as it was. It was the use of the diuretic.
Well, that's, yeah, controversy once again on the Podblast. I like that. So I'm glad to see Gideon sticking with Warne in his book On Warne. Otherwise, he should call it Shit Warne or something.
Yes, well, that's
Idiot
right.
Idiot Warne. Hate
but,
Warne.
It's a fantastic book. It's slightly strange that the potion, as it were, used by Warne was for removing fluids from the body.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not not something you've ever had any trouble with.
No, I get fluids out pretty well. What do you mean by that?
Just, you know.
That's true.
You piss like a racehorse.
Do I?
Not really. So, Cricket Australia, Muppet, Shane Warne back in the news. He was at Federer and Murray. He took that fantastic catch in the crowd at Federer and Murray and then promptly used his newfound platform to brand the administrators Muppets and to announce...
Right, now the cameras are on me. Oh, I hate that and I hate women.
What a golden opportunity to say a few things.
What a golden opportunity. I'm going to... Now, listen. Look here. Did he call them a bunch of Muppets? Because one of the Cricket Council did actually say in the last game, we've won 3 games, 4 games, 5.
One last bit, because we're running out of time. Australia, Sri Lanka at the moment, two 2020s, fantastic games. I saw a shot from Dilshan, the ramp, to Mitchell Stark, a.k.a. Jimmy Hill. If you're not sure, look it up on Google Images. Mitchell Stark's bowling 85 miles an hour. Good length ball, straight at Dilshan. Dilshan down on his knees. The ramps the bat, hits it for 6, 80 metres behind his head. Most extraordinary shot I've ever seen. My first cricket nets of the season tonight at the Oval. I think it's time to get practising.
Bring out the ramp. I thought you were saying that the ramp was Dilshan's nickname for a while, and that would be quite a good nickname to have. I think we need to start giving cricketers more abstract nicknames for no particular reason. We could call Mitchell Stark like the Flump or something.
Why the Flump?
I don't know. It doesn't have to. It should make as little sense as possible.
Oh, really? I was thinking that maybe you would take a meandering route. So Mitchell Stark looks like Jimmy Hill.
Yeah.
Jimmy Hill.
Yeah.
It's just a little bit Kevin Bacon.
The
actually,
Mountain. And then from The Mountain, call him Mountain Man or something. That's good, isn't it?
It's not very good.
No, it's not very good. But if you can think of really, really abstract nicknames, which inquire a whole story to them, I think we should do that. And tweet us. I also, when you said two Pakistani cricketers, I was wondering whether that's what Tupac Shakur is short for.
Two Pakistani cricketers, Shakur.
It's a wonderful name for a child. Did you consider calling your firstborn that?
No, I didn't. I did have to fend off Viola from my wife, which would have been...
It sounds a bit like violent and vile.
It's not an England women's cricket captain's name, is it?
No. Viola. Hey, I wanted to talk about women's cricket.
Okay, let's talk about it.
You know, women's cricket is a fantastic sport, and there is some great talent there. I really, really think that of all the games that women play, cricket is the finest. It's a great introduction to cricket, actually, because it's just slowed down a little bit. You can see all the nuances. There's really talented players. England, Australia are two fantastic sides. Watch more women's cricket, my friends.
Well, the World Cup's coming up on Sky. We encourage everyone to watch a bit of that. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing Charlotte Edwards and the girls.
Oh, God. Oh, by the way, I meant to say, we were talking about how... it'll have to wait. Join us next time for more cricket poetry.